From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As the states of Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Georgia flip from red to blue in the presidential election, we turn our focus today on how working class communities of color put in the tremendous amount of effort to make this possible. The presumptive president-elect Joe Biden would likely not have won the margins in swing states that he did were it not for these crucial constituencies. My guest is Saru Jayaraman, president of One Fair Wage and assistant adjunct professor of public policy and director of the Food Labor Research Center at University of California, Berkeley. Welcome to the program, Saru.
Thanks for having me.
So let's first talk about Arizona. There were disappointments with Texas and Florida, but let's talk about Arizona. This was a state that even Fox News was the first to call it for Joe Biden. What can you tell us about the work that especially immigrant communities and immigrant families, immigrant backing families, new citizens did in turning that state from red to blue?
I mean, I think all of these last few states that have been really holdouts and that are shockingly turning blue are the result of, frankly, women of color organizers on the ground in the, not just Arizona, also Georgia, Pennsylvania. Our organization had women of color organizers on the ground doing some of this work in these states. Organizing low-wage workers, organizing working families, organizing communities that typically don't vote because, frankly, they have not in the past seen the Democratic Party really do anything for them. But talking to low-wage workers, working families about the things that could change through organizing, not just, frankly, organizing to vote, but organizing for a different terrain on which to keep fighting. I mean, I think that's the thing that I think the Democratic Party has got wrong for so long. For so long, A, they don't even focus on communities of color. They don't focus on working people. But B, if it's all about vote, 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 and then they fail to address the needs of these communities after the election, these communities will see no reason to continue to vote. So for us, it was about organizing in Michigan and Pennsylvania. The same was true in Arizona. Communities organizing people to vote, again, not just to say, let's all go out and vote just because we should, but let's all go fight for a better future for ourselves. Let's go fight for a better terrain on which to fight. President Trump will not ever concede to raising the minimum wage or to immigration, the kind of immigration policy that we really need in this country for people to live with dignity and respect, or truly any kind of universal healthcare or healthcare for people, or climate change. So haven't been organizing people just to vote. We're organizing for a progressive future. And I think if the Democrats don't understand that, I've definitely heard, as everybody has, these comments that somehow this election, the lesson from this election is we've got to become more centrist. Somehow the way to unify the country is to move more to the center and stop talking about these radical ideas. When truly the people on the ground in Arizona, to answer your question, the reason why these states were won, the reason why ultimately Biden is likely to be our next president, the reason is because organizers were talking to communities about a progressive vision for the future and mobilizing people, again, not just to vote, but to keep organizing for that progressive future even after we vote. And it's that progressive vision that, frankly, most Americans believe in, agree with. In Florida, 66% of Floridians voted to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour at the same time that only about 52% voted for Trump.
Now, some people have pointed to Kara Eastman's loss in Florida. She was a progressive congressional candidate as a reason why progressive candidates can't win. And the fact that even though they voted for this $15 an hour minimum wage, it's because it didn't face much opposition because, frankly, it's a modest bill. It takes 5 years to get to 15. How do you respond to that?
Oh my gosh, there's been tremendous opposition to raising the minimum wage. I know I'm in the center of it. I have been the center of attack for a lot of the restaurant association's opposition to raising the minimum wage. That's just ridiculous. Listen, there is still white supremacy and patriarchy in our country. That is undeniable. And it makes it harder for women of color, women in leadership to really, you know, get the positions that sometimes they need to get. But the progressive values that so much of the country undeniably believes in are, I mean, the fact that that was voted on with such fervor, with such unanimous kind of consent, to me is an indication that ultimately we actually have to move away from the candidates and focus on these issues and really believe in the power of organizing and women of color who are leading organizing all around the country. It isn't just about the candidates.
Right.
It's about the organizers. It's about the organizing. That's what won Arizona. That's what's winning Georgia. That's what's winning Pennsylvania.
Looking at the sort of granular details of where votes were cast and where they're being counted, you see in states like Georgia and Pennsylvania, these seas of red because they're sparsely populated Republican areas, and then these giant, you know, these blue areas that are the densely populated cities where there are communities of color, in particular Black communities living, especially in, you know, Atlanta, and in Philadelphia. Those are the places where I understand, from what I can tell, the tremendous amount of get out the vote campaigning and work on the ground to get Black voters to show up at the polls to overcome the roadblocks that Republican state legislatures put in front of them has made a huge difference. Those were the votes that were being counted Thursday night that the whole nation was watching.
That's right. But I want to reiterate, this work to get people out to vote is not just about voting.
Yeah.
It is about a different future. It is about rejecting the last 4 years and frankly rejecting what was there before that, rejecting a neoliberal agenda that was not taking care of the majority of working Americans, that was not really thinking about the kind of policies that people truly want. So the organizing was not just to vote. It was about this vision for a different future. And the Democrats have to deliver on that future, not just celebrate the election and then take a back seat or think that now we move to the center and we try to please the right. I mean, just to what you just said, if it came down to communities of color in Philadelphia and Atlanta and Phoenix, then we've got to deliver for those communities. We've got to not only deliver for those communities, but we've got to inspire people with our ability to create change, to not go back to the way things were, but to envision a totally different future. That is what will keep people voting. That is what will allow this huge historic turnout to continue into the next cycle.
Do you think that presumptive president-elect Joe Biden is hearing this? Because right now, of course, there are a million and one people whispering into his ear, screaming into his ear. Perhaps among them are the center of the Democratic Party, where he is comfortable, because that's where he comes from. And then there are people at the grassroots who may not directly have his ear, but who are shouting as loud as they can for him to hear that they need to be rewarded for the hard work they've done. They want their policies at the front of his agenda. Is Biden up to the task? I mean, his VP Kamala Harris may look the part, but she too is from, I would say, the center left maybe of the Democratic Party.
Listen, we already know it's possible because they moved to the left during the campaign.
Yeah.
The policies and their platform that they put forward was a progressive, bold vision. And that is how it made it possible for organizers on the ground like us to actually inspire people and excite people who hadn't voted before to believe that if I vote this time, it actually might make a difference.
And of course, the centrists will argue that had Biden played to the center, the vote margin would have been bigger. But I mean, there's no really evidence to show that, because this is the discussion. This is the fight that takes place, the ideological battle between center and left that takes place every 4 years and in between.
I would just point to two things. Ultimately, who delivered? in Arizona, in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, who delivered in states that Hillary Clinton lost in 2016? Who flipped those states? It was communities of color, it was organizers, it was women of color. Yes, thrilled that there was a more progressive platform to work with to inspire people. So I think it has to be, the evidence is clear. Who inspired more people to vote? A centrist agenda in 2016 or a progressive platform truly fueled by women of color organizers that were able to ultimately flip states that nobody else could flip? That evidence is clear. And then if you look at Florida and you look at the minimum wage, to me, that evidence is also crystal clear that frankly, the divided nation and the 45% was, I think, because we weren't bold enough, because we weren't proud enough, because we weren't loud enough about the need for these universally progressive policies.
Right. That agenda was there on Biden's campaign platform. He wasn't speaking about it as loudly as he could have, but it was there for organizers to point to excite voters. But it would have been potentially better for him. And then you do have to contend with that section of the electorate that sees any Democrat as socialist, that sees any hint toward government, a role for the government as the socialist bogeyman. And unfortunately, Republicans are quite good at convincing some in, say, Latino communities to buy that.
You know, I think there's such misunderstanding of that word and what it means and the way that Republicans are using it as a...
And then is the task then for progressives to try to explain what that means better?
No, the task is to be very clear about the policies that we are talking mm-hmm. about. When you talk about raising the minimum wage, when you talk about healthcare that everybody can access, when you talk about the need to address climate change in Florida, when you're very clear about those things and unapologetic, people get it. When you start to use words that are rhetoric or you're reacting to the rights, you know, you're saying, no, we're not that. Every time you say, no, we're not that, it affirms what they said you are. So instead of saying, no, we're not that, we say we are about raising the wage to $15 an hour. We are about universal healthcare, everybody having the ability to go get healthcare. We are about absolutely addressing climate change and reproductive justice. Because if Biden had made a big deal in Florida of that $15 minimum wage, a lot of those people who voted, 66% who voted to raise the minimum wage to $15, would connect Biden to what they really believed in. And that's what we've been missing. I will say again, we saw and we were very appreciative of Biden and Harris moving the platform to the left during the campaign based on the amazing organizing of so many people across the country, having a platform that we could work with. But I think it will only help them going into the administration to actually live into that agenda unapologetically rather than moving to the center.
And we should also remind ourselves that there's this battle within the Democratic Party, but panning back and looking at it from the broad view, you had President Trump and his allies saying that they wanted to stop the vote counting before the Black and brown heavy districts votes were counted. I mean, they literally have tried so hard to stop the votes of people of color. They've tried to, you know, make it difficult for them to access the polls. And this year, once the votes were cast, they tried to stop the votes from being counted. Because when they were chanting, stop the vote, stop the count, stop the steal, what they were basically saying was, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Phoenix, all of those those densely populated cities where communities of color live, their votes don't count. They're literally telling people that.
When they are saying those votes are illegitimate, those votes are illegal, they are saying those people are illegitimate. Those people don't have a right, the same right as they do to have a voice in this country. And this is why, rather than moving to the center or pandering, What we need to be doing is actually mobilizing our people to say, absolutely, our voices will be heard, our votes will be counted, and our voices need to be heard not just in this election, not just to make Biden president, but frankly, they need to be heard in a Biden administration. Mm. We need to continue to mobilize. It's on us. We hopefully have learned our lesson from the Obama years. We can't be thrilled about getting Trump out of office and then step back and breathe a sigh of relief and say it's over, everything's going to be okay. We have to mobilize our people to demand that our voices be heard, to demand that the people that got him into office in these swing states are the ones that are listened to, that their needs are addressed, that their wages go up, that they get health care, that they get all the things that they need.
Finally, Saru, you are in California like I am. What happened with some of the propositions that had the flood of corporate money? Is California's proposition system broken because it's just far too susceptible to the unlimited buckets of money that companies like Uber and, you know, Wall Street hedge fund managers that own property in the state do?
I was very, very disappointing. And it just, again, pointed to, as you said, that with money, you can essentially confuse the electorate, completely, you know, disinform, spread a campaign of misinformation and disinformation.
Using language that progressives use, I should add.
Created packs called Feel the Burn for Proposition 22, or Progressive Latinos and Blacks for Proposition 22.
The NAACP seems to have lost all credibility in California, the California chapter of it.
A campaign of misinformation funded by corporations. Absolutely, we need to think about a different system. When corporations can pour $170, $200, $300 million into misinforming the public, because I know Californians would never have voted for Proposition 22 if they understood what it really meant for drivers.
This is the gig worker economy proposition.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this proposition is so harmful, it will result in these workers earning less than the minimum wage, getting a sub-minimum wage. It already has resulted in these workers having no access to unemployment insurance during a horrible recession and pandemic. It's devastating for millions of people. And I know Californians, had they not been misled, would not have voted for that. I know Californians generally agree with Prop 15, but they were so misled. I think it's time definitely for a different system in which there are limits on how much both sides can spend in misinforming or disinforming the public.
You would have thought that we would have learned from Proposition 8, the anti-same-sex, anti-same-sex marriage ballot initiative that narrowly won years ago because the population was misled into voting against same-sex marriage. And then we ended up overturning it through the courts, and certainly in a state like California. Yeah,
that's right. That does give you hope, though. It gives you hope that knowing that people were misled, we can correct the harm. And we have to do that now in California. Mm-hmm. We have to correct the harm. We have to be a harbinger for the nation of progressive policies that take care of people. And I mean, again, California is another proof point. When you actually deliver progressive policies, the state flips, as we're seeing with Arizona and Georgia and Pennsylvania. So let California be an example for the rest of the country, not one that regresses backwards, but one that really shows the path forward.
Saru, thank you so much, as always, for joining us today. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you.
My guest has been Saru Jayaraman, president of One Fair Wage, assistant adjunct professor of public policy and director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.